With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
I mean, hypothetically, anyway. Okay, maybe not so much when you're making decisions for WrestleMania. Sometimes you don't use your head with those. Sometimes you just need to eat a Snickers. Oh, hi, everyone. It's that wonderful time of the year we like to call the Raw after WrestleMania here on the Raw Reaction. The Season 5 premiere. Holy shit, Tony, we're starting 5 years doing this. And I think we've killed Tony.
Oh, my God, we killed Tony. We're bastards?
Us bastards!
Yes.
What the hell's going on? Why Tony can't answer? Tony, you there?
Put on your sexy headset. It's not working.
Yep, he just hung up. I guess he's not there. Maybe Tony will be back with us later. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you, Harry?
I'm good. While we're waiting for Tony to call back here, we might as well start this particular edition of the Raw Reaction the same way we usually start these episodes of the Raw Reaction following pay-per-views. Let's open with a final reaction for WrestleMania, shall we?
I suppose so.
Tony, is your headset working now?
I don't know. Is it? Can you tell me?
Yes. We can hear you now.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, we're starting 5 years doing this crap.
Well, congratulations, Harry. I'm very happy for you.
I'm kind of happy for me, too, I must say. All right, let's hit this right here real quick. We'll start off with a final reaction for WrestleMania because we do have quite a bit to get to on tonight's Raw after WrestleMania Raw. So let's go ahead and do the final reaction here. Let's start with our favorite match or moment here. And I'm actually going to say that my favorite match at WrestleMania this year was the mixed tag match. I really enjoyed how well put together that was. While not a great wrestling match, it was a very good sports entertainment match, which is kind of what the WWE specializes in. Andrew, how about you? What was your favorite match or moment from WrestleMania?
Agreed. The Rousey, Triple H, Stephanie, Kurt Angle match. That was kind of the peak of the show for me. Like it was well done, showcased that Ronda actually kind of knew what she was doing. She started off a little too fast and excited, but then she kind of fell into a rhythm and looked really, really good.
Tony?
My favorite WrestleMania match was the NXT North American title ladder match.
That wasn't on WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
That's a different final reaction.
No, I'm kidding. Actually, that was a great match. But no, I'm going to have to agree. The mixed tag was a lot of fun. It's always fun when you go with low expectations and you're pleasantly surprised.
All right, how about your least favorite WrestleMania match or moment, Andrew?
Most of the show. No, I guess I can't say that. I guess the thing that stuck in my craw the most was that whole Braun thing. It just drug on too long. It insisted upon itself. And then Braun single-handedly buried the entire division with the aid of a 10-year-old boy. Hooray. Yeah, I guess. Are we supposed to care? Is this Power Rangers Turbo the movie all over again? And nobody told me. Is that kid actually the Blue Power Ranger?
Oh my God, that was a boy? Wow.
Yeah, that was my initial reaction, too.
Yours and about most of the fan bases, Andrew. Tony, where do you fall? What's your least favorite match or moment from this year's WrestleMania?
I'm struggling because I want to say the same thing that Andrew did, but I'm trying to assure that we're a little bit different at least. So I'd say a very, very close second would be the main event, although not because Brock won, but because how much Brock had to do to win compared to every other single match he's ever had.
Thank you. It's not the fact that he beat Roman Reigns that pissed me off, because I think I predicted it, actually. I'm not sure if I called it here or if I changed my mind in between here and doing the SmackDown review that I did for W2M. But I know in one of those predictions I picked Lesnar to win the match because Heyman came out and said that this was Lesnar's last match with the WWE, which raised a major red flag to me. But Samoa Joe won F5 and he's down. Braun Strowman won F5 and he's down. Roman Reigns at SummerSlam last year in the Fatal 4-Way won F5 and he's down. This year, Roman Reigns, 6 F5s and he's finally pinned. What the fuck?
Because he lost so much blood. He could have taken 5 more.
He probably could have.
My least favorite match or moment was the Women's Battle Royal. And it has nothing to do with the match itself because most of the participants were tolerable, if not pleasant, surprises. It was nice to see Peyton Royce get a WrestleMania payday. It was nice to see a couple of the other NXT girls in that match. Kairi Sane, Bianca Belair, Kavita Devi, even though she looked like a giant, one of those like gobstoppers with that orange outfit she was wearing. But what kind of stupid-ass finish is it when you have Sasha and Bayley eliminating each other in order to end the match there, where Bayley looks like she's won. And then a babyface in Naomi is the one playing the stayed outside of the ring after going through the ropes on waiting on the floor until the end of the match card. What kind of ass backwards bullshit was that?
Swerve.
Speaking of swerves, there's a couple of other ones that we probably need to talk about from WrestleMania too, but we'll get to those a little bit later on in the show. Let's now go to our overall show rating, scale of 1 to 10, Tony. I noticed you used the word underwhelming in the column that you did for 411 for your Raw report here. Where do you fall on a scale of 1 to 10, though?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to say like between 5 and 6. I just continuously, you know, scratched my head last night. Nothing was offensive to the point where I was like mad, where I threw a remote or anything. Not that I do that anyway, but it was just, I had a question. I asked myself numerous times last night, like, is this product for me anymore? And what I meant was not that I'm quitting watching wrestling. I'm not that dramatic and I'm not going to stop, but is the content that they're producing meant for me, Tony, or people like me anymore? I'm not sure that the answer is yes anymore. Now, I'm okay with accepting that. I really am. Because at the end of the day, even if it's not for me, the second question that I ask is it good TV? And admittedly, it's just not. It's not. And it's not because I want everyone to understand this. As long as we've been doing this, it's never because they're not writing what I want. It's never been about what I, the singular person, wants. Regardless of the clout that I have for the website, for the fact that we do a podcast, I've never once said, I wish they'd do this for me, which is a big reason why I don't fantasy book. The other reason is that I'm a writer and I should be paid for that. But realistically speaking, it's not good television, and it's not about pleasing me. It's just looking at the product as a whole, how large the numbers have fallen consistently, not monetary gain, but viewership and new people that are joining on. And yes, you could throw the network's numbers at me. Well, guess what? It's WrestleMania. Of course you got a bunch of new subscribers. You know why? Because you gave it away for free. So don't toot that fucking horn when it's not even a real horn. I don't see the quality in the product anymore outside of the shiny veneer that is WrestleMania. It looked amazing. It created an atmosphere, and then it just went for the lowest common denominator in almost every match. And it's really unfortunate, which is why I give it 5.5 range.
Andrew?
I feel very, very similarly to Tony. But due to the fact that matches that on paper you didn't think could underwhelm, they found a way to underwhelm you. And that, like, Shinsuke AJ, that went absolutely nowhere. Reigns and Lesnar had a history of actually being able to put together an entertaining match, and then that was just garbage. And it's, there was just so much they could have done differently, and they failed to do it. So my final score is going to be a 4.5.
I actually enjoyed the show. And the reason that I enjoyed the show is because I don't know how you guys necessarily viewed it. I don't know if you guys got together with friends or family in Tony's case, because I know he has a history of watching these kind of shows with his little brothers. I was together with a large group of people, so I found myself entertained by most of the show, even though some of it did underwhelm me. I will say that I was very disappointed in Shinsuke and AJ, but the post-match heel turn definitely livens things up on SmackDown a bit. I was stunned by the finish to Asuka and Charlotte, and I think that having Asuka cut the promo that she did by saying that Charlotte was ready for Asuka does Asuka no favors. Her moving to SmackDown, if she does move to SmackDown, because she wasn't on Raw tonight, so that may be a full-time thing now after WrestleMania of her going to SmackDown. The only way to justify this is if Asuka can come back and just break a bitch. That being said, I thought that match was really well done until the confusing finish. I love the IC title opener. I was entertained by the U.S. title four-way, even though I don't necessarily agree with the winner. And I very thoroughly enjoyed the mixed tag team matches I talked about earlier. I fall somewhere in the range of about a 7 for this pay-per-view.
Okay.
Who is your MVP for WrestleMania, Tony?
Me.
I was going to take that joke for making it through 7 hours of show for myself, but no, I need an actual answer.
I'm going to give it to Ronda because she did great, and I'm proud of her, and I'm happy that she's on the roster, and I hope that she's successful, and I hope that her first loss does not send her in a tailspin of interviews and crying and suicidal thoughts.
No. No, God, don't throw that out there into the universe. Andrew?
Yeah, Ronda, because she not only overperformed for what we were expecting, she actually put on a good match. It was paced well. There was really nothing wrong with that, except personally I'd like her to keep the skirt on from now on, but that's just me.
I'm going to give it to the guys in the IC title match because I thought they significantly overperformed what was expected of them. I'm hearing many people saying that that's one of the 3 or 4 best WrestleMania opening matches in history, and it's hard to argue in my opinion. They went out there and they busted ass, and Seth Rollins decided to bust out the Sub-Zero look, which I popped for. All right, so let's get into...
Game of Thrones reference than anything, but sure.
Yeah, Mustafa Ali looked more Sub-Zero than anything else with his entrance.
I actually thought Mustafa Ali was cosplaying as Seth Rollins.
Huh.
Yeah, lots of us made that reference because I was at a party too, and we're just like, oh, who raided Seth Rollins' wardrobe? That's nice.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the Raw after WrestleMania, gentlemen, shall we? Rather than going match by match, segment by segment, interview by interview, let's just hit the high points here because there are a lot of them to hit. Our opening segment sees a reiteration of what went down in the mixed tag match as Ronda Rousey once again takes out Stephanie McMahon. Tony, do you think this leads to Stephanie being off of television for an extended period of time?
I mean, one could only hope.
Andrew, does one hope?
Yes, one hopes, because she is annoying. I don't know why. I don't know where she fell off the wagon somewhere, because she used to be a good heel, and now she's just so irritating and grating and says nothing new, and it's It basically just feels like she's trying to rehash her father's character, and she's really bad at it.
I will say that she actually did. I thought she did okay in this segment here. I won't say she was great or anything, but I thought that this one came off a lot better than most of her other segments do, and maybe it had something to do with the fact that she actually got some form of comeuppance in the end. So it made it a little bit more tolerable for her to play that whiny, bitchy heel that she's been playing on WWE TV now for so many years. This takes us into our opening contest, a tag match scheduled for one fall, as Alexa Bliss and Mickie James take on Nia Jax, who's in the ring alone getting a You Deserve It chant. Let's not get out of hand here, Raw after WrestleMania crowd. Let's slow our rolls. Let's sit back. Let's reevaluate that chant because, Anywho, Alexa makes fun of the fact that Nia came out by herself, stating that she has no friends. Nia says she does have a friend, she has a partner for tonight, and that partner is the debuting Ember Moon. Tony, you mentioned NXT TakeOver kind of half-jokingly when you talked about the six-way ladder match for the North American title. When Ember dropped the NXT title to the women's title to Shayna Baszler, was there any doubt in your mind that she was making the call up either on Raw or SmackDown this week?
Yeah, I mean, I figured as much. Not that I cared too much. Nothing against Ember or her character or what she could bring to the table, but she's walking into a division that is pretty depleted. Excuse me, in terms of quality. Can she add to the product? Yeah, of course. But, I mean, look at the women's division, man. How awesome was it a year or two ago, and where is it now? I don't know. Just we'll get more into detail with regards to Raw tonight, but this was the beginning of something that I feel was stigmatized by the reality that WWE is now fully aware how big of a deal Monday night is after WrestleMania.
Kind of how you started off the column tonight over on 401. And if anybody hasn't had the opportunity yet, I highly encourage you to go read Tony's Raw report for a more in-depth blow-by-blow breakdown of what we're going to be talking about here tonight on The Reaction. Backstage, Braun Strowman.
Let me ask Andrew real quick something. If for whatever reason they can't go to 401mania.com because their ad blocker isn't working, is there another website they could possibly check out a Raw review?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. I think thechairshot.com has live coverage, which it's over now, so it's not live. It's just an article, probably much like Tony's, written by Stephen Mitchell that he puts up for basically everything that's on TV aside from Impact. So if you go to thechairshot.com, you can find something there too.
Wow.
You're welcome, boss.
There's
man.
More than one place.
You're welcome, boss man. Hold on. Give me one second here.
With attitude, bitch.
Yes.
Felt appropriate. All right, moving on. I was going to ask Andrew his thoughts on Ember Moon's call-up. Andrew, your thoughts on Ember Moon's call-up?
I mean, I'm not surprised. I expected it, but what is she? Like, not only did Corey kind of make the joke that they're calling Ember the War Goddess now, and it's the War Goddess met, Raw's Goddess, like, that's going to just get stupid. What exactly is her character? Who really cares? Like, she keeps the same Athena garb that she had when she was an indie worker, puts on red contacts, has a moon because it's in her name. So is she a werewolf? Is she a cosplayer? What does she do? She still
She's
can't
a
cut a promo. That's possible too. But regardless, it just makes no sense. She has no character. She doesn't have very good mic skills. So she's going to be kind of Bayley 2.0 in my book, unless something drastically changes with this shakeup.
Backstage, Braun Strowman and Nicholas relinquish the tag team titles because Nicholas has school. The entire fucking tag division for a referee's son. Moving
my
on.
My kingdom for a horse.
Thank you very much for wasting my fucking time.
Yep.
Our second call-up of the evening. Our second call-up of the evening, Andrew, is No Way Jose, as he takes on John Skyler and more or less beats him like the job Holly that he is. Nice joke, Tony. In 23 seconds with the pop-up punch. This is a gimmick that is not going to work on the main roster, is it not?
Well, it didn't work with Adam Rose. Now, let's talk about this guy for a second, all right? Let's pretend that neither one of us three know who he is. Similar to Ember Moon, I'll reiterate Andrew's question. Who the fuck is he? This is one of the worst things you could do with a debuting superstar that is not over 7 feet and put them in a match with someone that no one cares about and let them win in a matter of 5 seconds. No one cares. No one. Not one person says, oh, my God, look at this guy. He's interesting. No one. And it's not going to work until they put him either with someone that we already care about or give him a lengthy match that shows his skills. That's truly two of the only ways where you could debut someone and have it work. We've seen this many times before. We've seen it fail. We've seen it not work out. And, of course, you know, some could say I'm putting the cart before the horse. But, again, we're basing this off of history. When this happened tonight, it was I'll have my last moment with my thoughts on Raw, but this was a very problematic issue for me. It's minor only because he's probably not going to work out too well, but it just, I mean, it was very, very formulaic. It was very, very repetitive. Nothing new. Literally, there was a bunny. We saw this already, and it didn't work. So, yeah, No Way Jose, I'm sorry, dude, but that whole moment was just eye-roll-inducing. You got it, man.
Hello, hello, hello. Echo.
To put Tony's line into more particular perspective for me, I was more concerned about the chick in the pink dress with the huge tits behind Jose than I was with Jose himself. Andrew?
Oh, yeah, that's what drew my attention to. Basically, he had that nice Adam Rose / Ho Train thing going on, and that was the only slight interest in it, but his character is played out. I mean, it's going to be like a Fandango thing. People are going to enjoy the intro or the entrance just because you get to get up and dance and do a conga line and be fun and goofy. But what is he? Where does he go? What makes him different? Nothing. Nothing at all. So I don't see much for him, but whatever.
Where does he go is easy. Absolutely fucking nowhere.
No, no way, not nowhere. That's his cousin.
Know how? Wish they'd have had the know how not to book this. Anyway, backstage, Cesaro and Sheamus confront Kurt Angle about getting their tag team titles back. Angle announces that there will be a 4-2 to challengers for Cesaro and Sheamus at the Greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia on April 27th. Speaking of said challengers, we find out that the first match in those pairings, joined in progress, so you know it's fucking important, are the Revival taking on the Good Brothers, the Club, Anderson and Gallows. The only good thing to come out of this for me is the fact that the Revival's back on Raw, and not only back on Raw, but picking up a win. I kind of feel like the Revival versus Cesaro and Sheamus could be fun, but based on what happens in the tag team match later, which we might as well touch on now, the later tag team match is Titus Worldwide taking on the team of Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, because that makes fucking sense. Which Hardy and Wyatt win after Wyatt Abigail's Apollo Crews to Matt Hardy for the Twist of Fate. That sets up the Revival against Hardy and Wyatt next week on Raw as the Hardy Expedition for Gold has its first attempted stop with the Raw Tag Team titles in an attempt to gain them with Bray Wyatt. Okay, considering who else made his return on this episode a little bit later on, and I'm not exactly putting the cart in front of the horse here by saying Jeff, wouldn't it have made more sense to do something with Woke and Matt Hardy and Brother Nero in this spot rather than Bray Wyatt? Tony, Andrew, your thoughts?
Nah, man. What if Jeff fucks up again?
That's it's kind of the same thing they did in TNA. Jeff had to grow into the Brother Nero, the broken character, and you saw a small snippet of it later on when he had the encounter with them and he was going through the weird mannerisms with words and, you know, pontificating and, you know, using exclamations at awkward times. So it's going to happen eventually, but this is fine. It's a logical progression for Wyatt. And they already kind of mentioned that Sister Abigail is now detached from him. So they could always expand on that with making it a female wrestler, call her up as her Sister Abigail and continue. So there's logical spots and Jeff needs to become woken. Just because he's related to Matt doesn't mean he's woken.
Jeff is a liability, so to intertwine him with any actual storylines may not be the best of moments. And also, it's better this way, I think. I mean, Matt and Bray, as weird as their story has been, I think I wrote in the report, the ride there was crap, but the destination is actually kind of fun. I like the way that they teamed together. I actually thought that they looked like they were having fun, and in turn, I had fun watching them. They played off of the cliches that they both created as characters and mixed them together to create something new. So, I don't know. I'm okay with it. I don't really leave Jeff to be what he was prior to leaving WWE, which is a single star with a lot of clout and a lot of energy behind him, and let him be another person that's somewhat new, but with a backing to enter the IC title, even if it's just temporary.
We talked about the fact that Jeff returns. He returns in the match immediately, in the segment, immediately following the Revival versus Good Brothers match, as Seth Rollins comes out to boast about his IC title win, making him a Grand Slam champion, and therefore every member of the Shield has completed the Grand Slam. Rollins is then interrupted first by Balor and then by Miz in the Miztourage. This all breaks down into an eventual offer for a handicap match. This is where Jeff Hardy actually makes his return on the show. These six men are then involved in the main event on the evening, which Team Rollins wins when he pins Miz for the second time in as many nights with the Curb Stomp. They kind of teased Balor and Rollins in a one-on-one pay-per-view match. Tony, they've given this match away on Raw for free twice in the last 4 weeks. Do you have any interest in seeing it as a pay-per-view singles title match?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I like watching them wrestle. Look, you could watch two people wrestle 1,000 times, and as long as there's a good story behind it, it's going to feel like a different match. If you want to get into the specifics of it, and like myself, who I'm typing it out, I could feel certain moments that are the same or similar. It doesn't matter as much as the story that's being told. So if the story's good, then it doesn't matter. I mean, look at Kevin Owens and Sammy and how many times they've gone head-to-head. And even tonight, another match between these two. I'm still not tired of it. Yeah, I hated the ending of that, but I'm not tired because there was a story there. This was interesting to me. Who is going to – I chose someone. I thought Kevin Owens was going to go to Raw again. I was interested to see what would happen. True, story sucked at the end, but again, there was a story. There was a reason. So if Finn and Seth have a match again, I'm okay with it. I really am.
Andrew, where do you fall on the segment and then the main event match itself?
The only upside to all of this is that I think we have to see the reemergence of the demon at this point, because sure, Finn is beaten Seth without the demon assistance, but that would make it interesting. That would give Finn an advantage, because they'll probably play that into the storyline somewhere, that Finn's been kind of riding Seth's coattails, or Seth beat him once, maybe Seth beats him again on Raw and they try to say he's not really deserving, so then something else has to happen. So we might get the demon back at Backlash, just to make it even a bigger deal than it already is, since it's the first co-branded pay-per-view since they're going to this format now. So, that's possible. And my biggest issue would be, if they don't do that, they don't know how to wrestle a different match. Like, they've had two matches in the last 4 weeks that were literally the same, except they extended it by 3 minutes the second time, so Seth won instead of Finn winning with the cradle. Like, it's almost like choreography to the point of I know the steps. I know, yes, it's scripted, choreographed to some degree, but I mean it as in it's almost like it's a dance that you can do at a wedding, just the way they go through all their crap. Like, it's so basic. Like, I don't want to see it again.
We kind of saw them tease the same spot at WrestleMania as well when it was the two of them in the ring during that triple threat match, and Rollins once again hit the superplex and looked for the Falcon Arrow into the roll-up by Balor.
Exactly.
Hey,
Miz's involvement in that changed things up. That was the nice part about Miz.
A women's division match follows as Mandy Rose takes on Sasha Banks. Tony, they are continuing to slow burn Bayley and Sasha here, having Bayley accidentally strike Sasha when Mandy rolls out of the way. In the ring, coming back inside, Mandy Rose hits a knee strike to pin your beloved Sasha. 4.5 stars?
Bro, it's not even a slow burn. It's lighting a match while it's raining. No one is going to be interested by the time this shit happens. I mean, I don't know how many times do they need to do this. How many times does Bayley need to accidentally hit Sasha or vice versa? How many times does Sasha need to blatantly attack Bayley in a match, outside of a match? How many times is one or the other going to come out to make sure that to even the odds against another team, only to fuck up at the end? I've lost all interest in this outside of the physical attraction to Sasha. Like, it's annoying to me, and it's so sad to see a crowd that is hot still chant for Bayley, and she has nothing to give. There's nothing there. Like, I don't know. There's a way to save this because there's a way to save everything. If you're an amazing or even a good writer, you can create magic. You can make a mountain out of a molehill. You can turn a penny into a dollar. You can do any tired cliche of turning shit into something awesome, and they just don't know how. They've stretched this out beyond its means. They've pushed it to a point where WrestleMania, where things culminate and end, was just another step in a story that no one cares about anymore. That I don't know what to do. I'm very upset. I'm upset about Raw in general. This was supposed to be our night, you know, and I feel like it was taken away from me.
Andrew, do you want to talk about the match itself, or would you rather focus on the post-match?
I mean, there really isn't anything to talk about in the match. Like, Mandy was Mandy. She was underwhelming, or she was just herself. So I guess that's not really underwhelming. That's just, can one be whelmed, you know? So that's just kind of what Mandy is. And the biggest takeaway I took from all of that was when Bayley was walking away, she was covering her mouth a lot. So I wasn't sure if she was breaking character in a sense and trying not to laugh because of what people were saying or the situation, or maybe that was in character. She was trying to stay stone-faced, but she was actually amused she cost Sasha the match. So it's the Bayley heel turn that everybody's kind of been sort of wanting to switch her up, but everybody just assumes it's going to be Sasha because they know she's a good heel, so the known commodity, kind of the devil you know kind of aspect. So who knows? Who knows? But like Tony said, it's gone on too long, and my interest really isn't there.
All right, let's talk about Paige's official in-ring retirement here. Not exactly a surprise by any stretch of the imagination, but kind of fitting to see her go out in the city that she made her in-ring debut in the WWE, is it not?
Sure.
I don't care.
I mean, this is the problem with Raw tonight as a whole. Everything was sold as mega important without us being able to make that decision. I mean, a superstar retired tonight, and she cried in the middle of the ring. But I just, you know, I don't really particularly care. I care about her well-being and her health as a human being, because I, too, am a human being, and I have some sort of empathy. But other than that, she didn't add anything to the show. She's not going to take away anything from the show. She's like 23 and has a movie about to be made about her. Like, I don't know. I also felt the moment's just weird, oddly placed. Like, let me wait for this storyline and match to end, and then I'm going to say my piece. I don't know. That just seemed weird to me. Like, she stood there for an entire match and then said, okay, now it's my turn. Like, if you ever want to remove the idea that this is scripted, that wasn't the right thing to do. So
similar to John Cena running during the end of a women's match where the moment wasn't even gone. Like, I don't know what's wrong with them. I don't get the timing of certain things, the pacing of certain things, the lack of importance being lent to something as big a moment as this for her. If they don't care, why should we care? And they don't care, bro.
I wish her well. I mean, like Tony said, as a human being here, there is a level of empathy there. Plus, it's somebody who we've seen sacrifice her body for our entertainment. I wish her well.
I've seen her sacrifice her body for her own entertainment.
God damn it, Tony. God, I was hoping we could avoid that tonight. All right, let's go ahead and move on then. Elias is in the ring now after promising the concert of a lifetime at WrestleMania. I actually thought the little interactive bit between Elias and Cena before Cena getting squashed by Taker was interesting. But that being said here, we see Elias come into the ring here, and he promises to give the concert that we didn't get last night there. He tries to heel on the crowd, and the crowd is having none of it, as Elias might be the most popular person in the building up to this point. And then he's interrupted by the returning Bobby Lashley. Andrew, I'll let you go first here. Your thoughts on Lashley making his return to the WWE?
We knew about that for a while, but I guess through the purview of casual fans, again, why? Like, he wasn't beloved when he left, what, 8-9 years ago? Like, he was ECW champion. That was a joke. No one liked ECW. He was hyped as something but couldn't really talk and had to have a mouthpiece. So is it big and scary? Yes. Since I kind of watched his stuff in Impact, has he gotten better? Sure. Will he put on good matches? Of course. But with the show and with the debut, they did nothing to make you care. It's just the inevitable return pop. Hooray!
Tony, do you find yourself falling into a similar position as Andrew here?
Well, while I will admit that I felt differently about this than I did about the debut of Ember Moon and or No Way Jose, and I did just say that No Way Jose, putting him in a squash match, which meant nothing, was the wrong thing to do, this wasn't as offensive because the build of the wrestler, the assumption that we're supposed to know who he is. But again, I think I've been trying to save this for the end of the show, but realistically it just continues to pop up with everything that we're saying. The WWE found out our little secret and has ruined it. And this is one of the ways in which they've ruined it. The debuts are supposed to be shocking, revolutionary. Oh my God, this is wild. And then it happens, and guess what? We have some idiot saying, this is shocking, revolutionary. You guys should be going wild. Like, you're taking everything out of it. So what could have been an amazing, oh my God, moment for us ended up being told to us that it was an amazing, oh my God, moment. That's, to me, that's offensive as a viewer. That's somebody breaking into the most intense moment of Breaking Bad and saying, damn, Walter White is a bad guy. Look at him. He's just watching her die. Oh my God. Don't you guys think he's a bad guy? I know the commentator's job, and I feel like they have lost track of what that's supposed to be. And this was another of the many, many moments tonight where they took away what could have been something awesome.
Well, it kind of goes back to John Bradshaw Layfield a couple of years ago throwing out that whole, the one night of the year where they're boo people they usually like and cheer people they usually hate. You kind of talked about it earlier, and you're going to touch on it again later, I'm sure, with your conversation about the whole WWE being on to the Raw after WrestleMania being the fans night thing. And they've said as much over the last couple of years themselves during the show itself. I'm okay with Lashley returning here. I think that Lashley's improved his game significantly in his time in TNA. He was a multiple-time TNA champion and honestly brought some validity to that company's title because even though he was a cast-off WWE guy, he reached a level of entertainment that he never reached in the WWE. His promo work got better. His in-ring work got a lot better. And he started to develop an ability to portray the character that he was given much better than he had in the WWE. I'm curious to see where Lashley's going to go now that he's back in the big company. But at the same time here, I question why it's constantly somebody like Elias that they're sacrificing towards either these returners or towards the older stars when they clearly have something that the fans are behind organically on their hands in Elias. Tony, you mentioned Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn a little bit earlier on. They meet up with Kurt Angle backstage here, and then that leads to Kurt Angle putting them into a match against each other where the winner gets a Raw contract. The match itself goes to a no contest when neither man can answer the 10 count off of Kevin Owens' swinging fisherman buster off of the second rope. Your thoughts on both the fact that they came over to Raw tonight as well as the match that they had, Tony?
Well, you knew they were coming to Raw. I didn't know what was going to happen. When I saw the idea of a one-on-one to see who gets the job, I thought, this is great. This is a good way to diminish the friendship that I think that may have very well gone stale and would not work again on Raw, and also gave intrigue and drama to a moment coming forward. Sometimes it's that simple. I mean, it's awesome. You see, you're like, oh, shit, well, there you go. And then you want to see it, and you want to see who's going to win and who's going to stay. And then they disappoint you. They pull the rug out from under you and say, neither one. Now, this may lead to something else in the future, which, I mean, it will, but something intriguing. I don't know. I don't have that much faith in them. But what they did tonight, I mean, they put on a good match, again, different enough to not feel the same as everything else. Complete opposite of Finn and Seth, anyway. And I just, it was like, well, shit, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, what are we doing here? What's going on? Are they going to get a second opportunity? Are they going to go to NXT? I don't, you know, like, so unless they come up with something that I think is very creative, I'm just going to sour on this particular match at this point because it doesn't make sense to me.
Andrew, is it mildly wrong that I kind of want this to lead to the wrestling return of a certain masked generic luchador?
It's not wrong, but I don't think that's happening. And I really don't want to see Zayn on 205 Live. But, yeah, I don't know where they're going with this. Like, honestly, it makes no sense to me unless they're basically just going to have Kevin and Sammy be Heath Slater all over again. They're going to do the free agent thing, trying to find a spot on Raw or maybe 205 Live or maybe even NXT. I don't know. Maybe they'll go to Main Event and they'll get a job there. You know what I mean? I don't know. I got nothing. Like, where the hell do you go with this?
They would definitely be the flagship bearers of Main Event. That's a nothing but a job squad over there. Our next call-up from NXT happens in the very next contest as it's the Authors of Pain brought up to the main roster. They were well past their due date in NXT. I thought that they had done everything that they could in NXT, and they were bound and determined to make it to the main roster. Putting them on SmackDown would have been kind of superfluous, given the fact that you have the Bludgeon Brothers over there doing that whole dominating tag team gimmick. What do you think the Authors of Pain mean to the Raw tag team division, Andrew?
I mean, they have written many leather-bound books on how to hurt people. Pat McAfee told us that on Saturday. Do you not remember that, Harry?
I missed most of the NXT pre-show. I only watched the main card itself.
Pat McAfee was actually hilarious because he basically Amelia Bedelia'd a lot of things and just took it literally. So he thought they were authors of pain, like they were actually, you know, like, well-read and, like, really good writers, and they wrote books on pain. And it was funny. He added a dorky little kind of flair to it that Sam Roberts really has no personality, so he can't really add himself. But, I mean, it's nice to see AOP up there, and it's nice they brought Ellering with him. So, that's nice.
Yeah, they brought Ellering with them. I was just about to say that, Tony. They brought Ellering with them. They left without him. The understanding is that Ellering doesn't want to work with the WWE's travel schedule, whereas NXT was taped mostly all in one location for an extended period of time. Do you think this Authors of Pain gimmick can survive on the main roster without the mouthpiece that was Paul Ellering?
Depends on how well they've developed their own kind of ability to talk, because I don't remember them cutting promos in NXT themselves much, so That should be very interesting to see unless they don't talk and just beat up people.
Very limited promo skills towards the end of their NXT run. Ellering did most of their talking. Tony, what are your thoughts here?
I mean, they had more than every other debut as far as characterization and build. Again, this was formulaic to the T. Two guys that we know that are well-established come out to the ring and challenge anyone in the locker room on the Monday after Raw. And lo and behold, it's a new debut that we've never seen on the main roster before, and we're supposed to be completely and utterly shocked to the point where Cole's "oh my" is something that amplifies our internal feelings. No, does not. It's unfortunate, because by this time I was pretty soured with the show, and I didn't give them the reaction that they most likely deserved. With regards to them surviving, it really depends on how they're built and how they grow as performers as well as promo cutters. I believe that anyone could survive except for Eva Marie, so I'm not going to knock them without seeing their ability to grow.
I actually thought Eva was getting better when she left, so what do I know?
Wow! This podcast is over. After 5 years, Harry's finally said the dumbest thing in America. Is there a mute button, Harry? Because you should push it right now. Don't you ever say something like that again. Wow.
I didn't say she was good. I said she was getting better.
Getting better? She didn't even wrestle the last months that she was on TV. She pretended to be injured. There was nothing better.
That made it better.
The best moment she ever had was being mounted by AJ. That's it.
I don't know, when her top popped off, that was a pretty good moment, too.
Even that was fake. Like, I don't
I mean, we know her boobs are fake. Most of them are.
Yeah.
Aww,
it's kind of sad now.
Roman Reigns in ring promo, because they threw him out there to die in front of a crowd that was going to eat his lunch. And then they brought back Samoa Joe in the segment as well, as if an extra added fuck you to Roman. Why would you throw Roman out here in front of this crowd knowing damn well the reaction he's going to get, Andrew? Like, why? What was the point? To bring back Samoa Joe for a match that we've seen?
It's all in the portrayal. This is actually okay. I get, like, Joe was going to get a big pop anyway. Joe had issues with Joe. Samoan's named Joe in stereo. Like, it's really nice. But either way, Roman's whole promo was just conflicted. Like, he has no faith in himself anymore. And it was so evident in his body language and everything. So he went from the Samoan sex machine just, you know, oozing machismo and, you know, just confidence and all this other stuff, that he's broken now. And you could tell that, where he's just like, I read it online. I didn't even know I had this. I don't even know why they're putting me in a cage with Brock and blah. And like, he basically was Dante from Clerks. And I really wanted him to say, I'm not even supposed to be here today. But it was so sad. And then they had Joe come in just to rub it in. And Joe's just like, well, guess what? You were running your mouth for a year, said you could beat him, and you failed. You suck, and all this other stuff. So it's interesting. They're not going to get any sympathy from the crowd because the crowd doesn't like him anyway, but this could be an interesting seed to do something different with the character, because we finally have seen that air of confidence or the Samoan pride or whatever you want to call it just shatter.
Tony, weren't we saying those exact same words about John Cena like a month and a half ago?
I mean, I'm pretty sure I never said anything like that with regards to John Cena, because I don't think they have that much depth in their writing abilities. I would love for Andrew to be right. I'm not saying he's wrong. I don't know. But, man, that would be an amazing fold. Do you know why? Because it's relatable. And you'll see, if that were to happen, you'll see people go behind Reigns. But it won't happen. Because all we want to see is Reigns lose, and we want to see Samoa Joe kill bitches dead. So I don't think they know what they want to do with Reigns anymore. We got Brock Lesnar still the champion. They're still going that route. I don't know what they're doing with that. I don't know how. I don't know if they're going to give Reigns the title at Saudi Arabia. I don't know. I know when I saw Brock Lesnar resigns, I was happy. And then when I saw the hyphen and realized it said resigns, I wasn't so happy. It was like a very fleeting moment of happiness that just went away. Reigns, if it's the defeated man who is, like, you know, humbled by losing, then awesome. I think that that's a great story that could be better told with Reigns than it will ever be told by John Cena's stupid face. And I mean that literally. His face is what ruins moments like that. You just can't believe him. Reigns has more of a, you know what? I mean, maybe Samoa Joe's right, man. Maybe I can't beat Brock, you know? But I don't think we're going to get
maybe
that.
I
think
do
we're
suck.
Gonna get the, yeah, maybe I do suck. Well, shit. You know, and I think if he were to say that, it'd be way more impactful than than anything John Cena says. So, but again, this is a very, very, it's an unfortunate feeling that I have, because typically when I don't know what's going on, I'm happy about it. I want to be surprised. I want to be entertained. But I feel like they pushed people to a point, especially after tonight, Monday night after WrestleMania, where it's like, man, you guys really don't know what you're doing, do you? You could see it with the rush nature of everything that's coming up, with the cliche ways of building and debuting people, with the show being no different than the show prior to WrestleMania. Like, I feel like they finally hit their wall. You know, WrestleMania seemed like just another pay-per-view. If you were to watch Raw tonight, you didn't feel a fresh start. You didn't feel like, all right, slate's clean, let's see what we got. You didn't really feel that. I didn't. I didn't feel that. I saw a couple of new debuts, but I saw a continuation of 2 weeks ago. I saw chapter 342 instead of a new book. Like, I'm not saying they should have erased every feud and started anew, but there should be some semblance of that feeling where you're like, ah, all right, WrestleMania just happened. Some storylines were finally ending, and we got some good closure. Now let's tell me another story. You know, I'm sitting here by the fire. Tell me another one. What else you got? Give me another one. But instead you're like, no, but wait, hold on. I'm not done yet. Because after Bray and Matt have this crazy fight with a lawnmower in a river, they end up teaming together, and there's more. Well, come on, man.
Hey, Tony, got a question for you since you were bringing it up. Do you think WWE is basically using certain shows as like a Pinterest? And I mean that in the simple fact that look at Raw 25. They knew the casual crowd was going to show up, and it was like their biggest number in years, because I think they did like 4.5 million people or something like that. So they just literally threw Attitude Era at you, people you'd know, just nostalgia pop. They know this is going to be a bunch of smarks that bought tickets, and it's going to not go the way they want to for a real show. Plus, they've got the shakeup next week. So do you think they just kind of figured, let's phone it in for these next 2 weeks, because no one's going to want to see what the show is. Everybody's going to want to see who moves during the shakeup and who comes up during, you know, the Raw after Mania and the SmackDown after Mania, because it's all the smarks. So aside from taking the fun out of it for certain fans, do you think it's really just a bullet point on their list where, all right, this is a throwaway show, this is a throwaway show, let's actually start the next one in 2 weeks? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that they're in a perpetual state of phoning it in. That exact feeling that you described is something that I feel they've never escaped. And it's partly because they work so damn much, but it's also partly because they know what works. They know that if they put Raw 25, they don't really have to do anything. They know that if they call it WrestleMania, they don't have to do anything. The performers will. They'll try their best to do something, but they're still pigeonholed by bad writing. We go to indie shows all the time, all three of us, and there's no storylines there. How do they win us over? They wrestle. They wrestle their asses off. They tell a story in the ring. Well, in WWE, with everything being so formulaic, what do you end up getting? You end up getting Finn versus Seth and Andrew feeling the way he feels. Like, that's not a story. That's a dance. I've seen that before. I've seen this many times, and you know what? I'm not really sure I want to see it again. that's unfortunate to hear a man, a wrestling fan, a bigger wrestling fan as Andrew is, as international a fan as he is, say, I don't really feel like seeing Seth Rollins and Finn Balor wrestle again. That's heartbreaking. Like, that's what you've done, WWE. That's what you've created. Like, that sucks.
I agree.
I'm going to actually kind of agree with Andrew's line of thinking here. I think that the fact that they put the superstar shakeup immediately following the Raw after WrestleMania, that what Tony talked about in getting these new and developing feuds and getting these furthering of previous storylines and creations of new ones is going to get pushed back for the hyperbole that is the Raw after WrestleMania, and that will be the episode of the superstar shakeup here, because they're going to be so up their own ass in regards to what they have to do for the superstar shakeup. Up with, we have to move this person, and this person, and what they have to do for the Raw after WrestleMania, we have to debut him, and bring him back. That the traditional storytelling that we get in that we usually get in professional wrestling gets lost somewhere along the way.
All right, we had the Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt versus Titus Worldwide tag match here. We covered that already. Sammy versus Kevin here. We covered that already, and the main event was the six-man tag that we covered already as well. That brings us to the end of the show here. Let's go ahead and do a quick final reaction here, and then I want to get your guys' thoughts on what we might see tomorrow on SmackDown. So let's start with the final reaction for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Tony, what was your favorite match or moment from tonight's show?
Let me see. I mean, I liked the main event, but it wasn't anything we haven't seen before. What am I missing? I know there was a match that I enjoyed.
Sammy and Kevin?
Yeah, well, even that had a sour taste at the end. Yeah, I enjoyed their work together. I'll give it to them. If not, then give it to Kurt Angle's TNA jab. I mean, it's outdated, but it was still pretty funny.
Andrew?
You bastard, I was going to go for the TNA jab. Son of a bitch. Now I guess I just have to go with the Wyatt Wilkin Warriors, whatever that is, because it at least makes Bray fresh. It expands on their Wilkin universe. It's nice to see them running with it. And if Matt gets more control of it than Vince usually allows people to have in WWE, this could be fun. People could actually give a shit about Bray Wyatt again.
Yeah.
If.
I really like Jeff Hardy's reaction to it all, where basically, like, it was way better than anything Cole has ever done. He shrugged his shoulders like, it's my brother, man. Like, it's not hurting anyone. Fuck it. You know, like, so it felt like, yeah, maybe it's not the realest thing, but fuck it. Like, I wish that Jeff did more in a shoulder shrug than Cole's done over the past month and a half.
True.
Cole constantly burying the Hardy thing, though, is a Vince thing, and I'm pretty sure most of us know that.
I mean, 90% of
Cole's
what they say is a Vince thing.
Now, okay, that's fair, but that's Vince directly burying it through Cole because he didn't expect it to be as popular as it was and to draw the ratings that it did in both the episode itself as well as the outcry from the fans who watch on Hulu who were pissed that Ultimate Deletion wasn't included on the Hulu version of Monday Night Raw the week that it aired.
True.
I'm going to go with the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match as well, although I would have liked a decent finish slapped onto that. I feel like you could have a story where one of them's floating back and forth between the two shows, either trying to figure out a way to butter up Shane and Daniel to bring them back to SmackDown or trying to figure out a way to butter up Kurt to get them signed to Monday Night Raw. But the match itself was it is a Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match that we've seen before, but it's been so long since we've seen it, it felt fresh again, if that makes sense.
It does.
What about your least favorite match or moment, Tony?
Jesus, man. there was a lot. I'm just going to say the kid, Nicholas and Braun, and the fact that you're relinquishing. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Braun's like, Yeah, Braun is basically like, here's the titles, I'm not interested in them anymore. And this kid has to go back to school. Okay, so you just put down every tag team, and then you gave the titles to one man, basically saying that your current champions suck, and then you make him come back the next day to give the titles back after demolishing every single tag team, and then you make me watch four other tag teams that I've seen lose to one man, and expect me to care about them. I don't see where you get that from. I don't see how you can make that happen for me. And you give each team here matches that are less than 5 minutes. Anderson and the Revival, or the Club and the Revival, how long did that really last? Like, you just, good job. Good fucking job.
We're going to try to find Tony a Benadryl. Andrew?
Well, just to address what Tony said real quick before I get to my least favorite thing. The only argument I can make against your point is we only saw three of the four teams before because the Woken Warriors are completely new. Come on, Tony. You know that.
Oh.
Yeah, wow. But if they had the opportunity, they'd probably bury them to Braun Strowman in one fell swoop as well. Carry on, Andrew.
I mean, probably. So, yes, my low point of the show is No Way Jose and everything he does. You know, yes, you're
so
right.
Unfortunate.
The girl in the pink dress and the black bunny mask, that was an upside to his whole thing, but he's a low point embodied.
I'm saying if that pink dress chick sticks around, then I might be somewhat interested in the future.
Is that also why you like Yujiro Takahashi from the Bullet Club?
I mean, Tokyo Latina's got it going on, I ain't gonna lie.
Okay, just checking.
But anyway, it's the same reason I tolerate Tai Chi.
Oh yeah, Tai Chi. Miho Abe is beautiful. Yes.
Yeah, him because of her. She's the reason I tolerate his appearance on my screen too. Anywho, I'm gonna completely agree with Tony with the whole thing with the with Braun Strowman and Nicholas there. They buried their entire fucking tag team division so a 10-year-old could tell everybody to get these hands. Shut the fuck up. This is nothing against the kid, because I'm sure, given the opportunity when I was his age, I would have done the same damn thing he's doing here. I would have taken that spotlight and run with that bitch. But as a long-term wrestling fan here, this does nothing for the workers. This does nothing for the division. And it does nothing for the credibility of the tag team titles. I like Jimmy C. ranting about the tag division over here. Scale of 1 to 10, Andrew.
5.5. It was basically average, a couple interesting, I suppose, debuts. Nothing got really done. And I guess I can hold out hope that Roman's weird promo is going somewhere, but much like Tony said, it's probably not. I'm just hoping because I can see a story in what they did. I could write it myself, and it's just I want them to do it, and they probably won't make me sad.
Tony, I'm interested to hear what you have to say here other than at you.
Bless you.
Thank you.
WWE. You assholes. Look, I knew this was going to happen a year ago, and I didn't say anything because I didn't want it to happen. You kind of felt it. You kind of felt it in the air last year. For the past many years, the WWE has had a Raw after WrestleMania where either A, people who couldn't afford WrestleMania bought tickets, B, people from out of town chose to do the entire weekend and Raw was a part of that, or C, people who are in both of those options were at Raw. So what you have is a crowd of rabid fans that have watched so much wrestling that they are just ready to be shocked and awed and appalled. And Monday night after WrestleMania is for the live crowd. It is for them and it has been built around them. And they're well aware of what they can and can't do, and they just throw it all out. I mean, you had Dolph Ziggler win a title one year, and it blew the crowd off. You had Enzo and Cass debut, and it made the crowd just go wild. You had people show up that shocked the world. You had moments that were transcendent, literally, in wrestling. And tonight was the night that I was dreading, because I felt they were going to ruin what I feel is the fans' Monday Night Raw. Our Raw, not the fans that watch casually or every other week, not the fans, not the kids. This was for us. I don't mean grown-ass men. I mean the IWC. I mean the people that love this product so much that they've devoted all of their time and energy, and from flying across the world to us just waiting for this moment, and they ruined it. They ruined it because they knew, and they made it a point to tell us that they knew. And it just took everything out of it. You know, it took everything out of it. It was that feeling, that euphoria, the goosebumps, not felt once tonight. Not shocked at all. Not, oh my God, I can't believe that person showed up. I can't believe this person debuted. Everything was gone. And the reason why is because the moment that it happened, Michael Cole stripped it away. Coach was horrible tonight. I haven't seen him have a bad night since he returned. He was bad tonight. I know that this sounds like, because I'm always jaded and angry, but tonight, like, I feel like I'm one of those writers, because I was mad. I was like, Coach, those aren't soccer chants. Don't take this away from us. Yes, they're chants that are usually heard at a soccer game. Yes, soccer games are incredibly intense and crowd responsive, and they sing the similar songs, but that's not what we're here for, Coach. Don't take that away from us. Do not strip us of this. Oh, look at, they're doing soccer chant. No, they're not. They're singing a song that they have sung for years for a woman that is not being used correctly. Monday night, tonight, could have been something amazing, and it was something lackluster. It wasn't even something that you could build properly upon. I've said this every year for the past 4 years. This Monday could be a springboard for the future, and the WWE never capitalizes on it. However, tonight wasn't even a springboard. They stripped away everything that made this Monday special. They told us what they were doing instead of simply doing it. They said, look, we're doing what you tell us to do. We're doing what you expect every single Monday after WrestleMania. And then you start the show by telling me, oh, well, the crowd, you know, they cheer for the people that we usually boo, and they boo for the people that we usually cheer. It's a weird crowd. It's a crazy crowd. The minute that they did the WWE 24 special on the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania was the minute that I knew that it was never going to be what we wanted it to be again. And tonight just proved it, and it makes me very sad. 3 out of 10.
I mean, if you add Tony and my score together, you get a 10. I gave it a 7. Look, I get Tony's bitch about the show. I do. I understand it. They take these opportunities, these moments that could have been, and they beat you over the head with them. I like to consider myself more of an optimist, however. I like to look at the debut of somebody like Ember Moon, who I'm a fan of, because I've liked her ring work ever since she was Athena. I like to look at somebody like the Authors of Pain, who have accomplished everything that was possible for them to accomplish in NXT, and this is the next logical step. I like to look at somebody like Bobby Lashley, who improved himself significantly over what he was while he was out in other places, and is now coming back to kind of try to stake that claim in the WWE. I look at the returns of people such as a Jeff Hardy and such as a Samoa Joe that I'm interested to see what they do from both a in-ring and a character perspective when they start back here. Yeah, Cole was annoying as fuck tonight. Coach was annoying as fuck tonight. Corey even kind of laid it on a little thick himself. But if you can take the announcers out of the equation, and I know that they're the soundtrack of the event, so it's difficult to do so, I still had a fun time watching the show. I'm going to go with a 7.
Yeah, even taking them out of the equation, they do debuts for the sake of doing a debut. They bring up the person for the sake of bringing them up. There was nothing, there's no reason, there's no good enough story to latch on to. There's nothing to say like, damn, hell yeah, let's see where this goes. What did we see start tonight? Bobby Lashley suplexed Elias. Ember Moon pinned the previous women's champion. AOP, I mean, they squashed a tag team, which I'm okay with because of their size and what they're being built as. But then they also eliminated the one thing that I think a lot of people were supremely interested in, and that was their manager. So you debut people for the sake of debuting them. You know, it's not because they were super ready. It's not because they had a storyline going into it. It's not because, you know, the AOP are going into a division that doesn't even exist. And they're not a part of the tag team, whatever the fuck Angle wanted to call it. So what does it matter? It just, I feel like they took our Monday night and they said, okay, what did we do every year? Yeah, let's do that. Instead of saying, okay, let's fucking make a show that works. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the writer's room, but I just feel like all of them are like, you know, there's a hat full of cliches. Let's pick out five this week and just run with it.
Let's go ahead and give an MVP for tonight's show here. Tony, I'm curious to see where you're going to go with this, so I'll start with you.
I don't know. Probably Kevin Owens. I just, you know, it's nice to see him with some red ropes around him. I also like the little things. I need this. I need this for my kids. I need this job. You know, like, it added importance to what they were doing. Didn't like the shit ending, but, yeah.
Andrew?
It's a good question. An MVP. I mean, somebody that actually mattered. Well, I guess the only one that was really the most valuable person on the show was Ronda. Like, Ronda had the biggest impact in Mania. It spilled over nicely to Raw. So it did kick things off nicely. The crowd popped. Everybody liked it. Granted, I didn't really like her, you know, putting her in that little, like, cross-arm breaker triangle thing and then popping up and just smiling as the refs and everybody came in. Like, that was off-putting because she's supposed to be a face, right? And I get it, you just laid out the heel, but you don't grin and you don't prance around like, look what I just did. Like, that's not what you do. So that part was odd, but, you know, I guess Ronda's the biggest thing going, so it goes to Ronda.
He kind of took mine. I was going to go with Ronda as well for much the same reason. I think she got the show off to a really hot start here, and it was an opportunity to hopefully write Stephanie off for a while.
Hopefully.
What are your expectations for SmackDown tomorrow night, Tony?
I have none. I'm going to watch the show, and that's it.
Andrew, same question.
You know, I want Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens to, like, get some, like, Groucho Marx kind of, like, glasses and a mustache and show up and be like, hello, we're a new tag team. We're not Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Or, like, find, like, the old Conquistador's mask or something like that and just start basically just taking the piss out of it, because if they're not on a roster going into next week, then they're not part of the shakeup or something like that, so... I don't know. If they have fun with it, I can tolerate it. But aside from that, I'm assuming more of the same. And obviously, we're going to get a promo from Shinsuke, like, you know, explaining why he turned heel. Or it'll be a promo from AJ. Maybe Shinsuke will come out and say he doesn't deserve an answer, kick him in the head, knock him out, you know, something like that. But those are, like, the only things I can really say I would be interested in seeing.
I think we're going to get at least one call-up on SmackDown tomorrow night, and probably two. The one call-up I think is almost a lock for tomorrow night is Andrade Cien Almas. And hopefully Zelina comes up with him if he does come up, because he's dead in the water without her. The other call-up that I think we're going to get is to help the women's division, as I think the Iconic Duo gets called up, and we kind of saw the start of that, in my opinion, when Peyton Royce was involved in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania on the pre-show. A little surprised to see Peyton in that match, but not Billy.
Peyton was also in that Access tournament, though, whatever that was, for, what was it, number one contendership of the women's title or something like that?
I can't say I followed Access that closely this year, but I can look into it.
I just saw a video with the Iconics on one of their Twitters, and I think they had to face Dakota Kai in the finals. I don't know who actually won, but I know Peyton made it to the finals of whatever that Access tournament was. So that could be why Peyton got the push up and Billy didn't. But I agree with Iconics. I don't think Andrade's moving, though. because Drew McIntyre was on the pre-show for NXT, basically saying he's got unfinished business with Andrade. So I would like to see him stay down there just to kind of turn that into a nice little triangle issue with Drew, Alistair, and Andrade.
Well, our former co-host here on The Reaction, Robert Taylor, seems to be of the opinion that the other main call that we're going to get tomorrow night is going to be Drew McIntyre himself to come out and challenge Jinder Mahal for the U.S. title.
Oh, no. Two of the three-man band? You can't do that. Come on. That's rude. They're friends.
No, Bobby's going to have to do something else. He's out of the U.S. title picture now. Never mind. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I'm sure we'll have a lot to. Well, I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about next week with the Superstar Shakeup and the people who move over from SmackDown to Monday Night Raw next Monday night as well. Here, and we'll be here to discuss it. For the new guy, Andrew Ballas, and the Down Since Day One co-host Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanking you for listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. And where can they find the Chairshot Radio online, Andrew?
That would be thechairshot.com. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Andrew, does that guy, what the hell is his name? Greg DeMarco. Does he have any shows coming up?
As in podcast kind of shows?
Yeah, something they could find on the same network that they're currently listening to.
Oh, yeah. I guess you could find a multitude of different podcasts on Chairshot Radio Network, because he's got his own show. His own show is Outside Interference, which was aptly, wonderfully renamed by yours truly, because, you know, he was using his own name as the Greg DeMarco show and didn't really think it had a that, you know, genetic plot, so he had to change it. It will. And then there's Pod Is War. There's Raw Reaction, which you're listening to now. Hopefully. If not, then I don't know how you're listening. What?
You know what else you could find on the Chairshot Radio Network?
Ooh, what?
There is a podcast that talks about bar stories and things that are hilarious in a bar setting. And it has nothing to do with wrestling at all. But you may
Wait, we have Bar Rescue? We have Bar Rescue with John Taffer?
No, you have something way, way better. That show is fake.
Ooh, what? Oh, so what is this? What is this? Tell me.
This is the realest bar podcast you'll ever listen to. Speakeasy Podcast, starring Tony Acero and two other guys that you do not know. Yeah, I am in the process of transferring all of the video versions of my podcast into audio versions for the Chairshot Radio Network, and Greg will be putting them up on a weekly basis. So far, we've interviewed a gay bartender, a burlesque dancer, a actor, not known. You probably have no idea who he is. We've interviewed a childhood friend of mine. We've interviewed a real estate agent. And all of it circles around just stuff that happens when you drink and hopefully turns into some semblance of depth in terms of conversation, but usually not.
Interesting. So are you going to backlog everything for the Chairshot Radio Network? So will it start at episode one, or will it start at episode 7 or 8, whatever you get around to?
It should start at episode one and move on from there. So I'm looking forward to the collaboration. Greg wanted it, and I said sure. So I think it's his way of trying to goad me into more working together. He really seems to have a crush on me, and I understand.
I mean, I can understand it, too. So, hey, it's a good thing, you know?
Yeah, I get it. All right, that's it. That's all the plugging we have to do. Listen, look for us. Find us. We're all entertaining in our own ways. Even Harry. Even Harry, guys. Go figure.
He's quiet.
I hate all of you so much right now.
All right, it's time to get out of here.
Tony Acero.
I got to be right now, 'cause I can't get much.
send us home, Tony.
Deuces, bitches.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.